Okay, item number seven, marijuana eradication on agency lands. This is a briefing with Captains Rich McMahon and Chris Anderson. Welcome, gentlemen.
Lot marijuana growers.
Yeah, it's Larry's dad.
Buy a boat, get a kilo.
Okay.
What's it used to? These guys are from Mexico.
Are these guys where the hell come from?
This is our new budget balance.
My dog shot.
Yeah. This is the free market.
That's kind of scary.
I guess. That's good.
Yeah, I just know that, yeah.
Madam Chair, over here.
Director Anderson?
Maybe while we were waiting for them to set up, I just wanted to make a couple of more comments on the previous agenda item. You're going to receive a presentation in June from Jennifer Kwan, our Lands Division Manager, that looks at operation and maintenance of our lands. And, you know, there was kind of a flippant remark about not having two nickels to rub together to maintain our lands, which, frankly, is a little bit disturbing. We spend millions of dollars, frankly, in maintaining our lands. Are there places where we could do better? Sure. And we're looking for ways, much in the way you heard presentations this morning about being more efficient and more effective in the way we utilize our resources. We do have some additional resources that are being made available to us through the Discover Pass and through some other entities that are going to allow us to do a better job of doing that. But before you, I'm hoping you don't jump to conclusions about what we are or aren't doing. Allow us to come forward, have that presentation in June. I think you're going to see some good things and hear some good things about what we have done and what about what we're planning to do.
Very good. Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, I'd just like to make one comment to follow up on that. The indication that the department is not doing a good job of land management is historic. People have been complaining for a long time. But occasionally the lands program has put out a publication, a newsletter, sort of a thing on their activities. And when you take a look at that and look at what is being spent, what is actually done on the ground, it's pretty amazing what they're accomplishing with what they've got. And the mitigation wildlife areas are extremely well managed. And those that don't have the advantage of those kind of funds, they're actually doing a lot out there. But it's something that isn't very well known, and I think it would be really advantageous if that group could get out somehow. It's been tried in a number of different ways, but I'm sure there's some way we could do it.
Okay, thank you for that. Captain Anderson, Captain Mann, Deputy Chief Sensi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess there's strength in numbers. I'm only going to be up here briefly. You know, our lands attract a lot of legitimate use. They have a lot of value. There's quite a bit of interest in recreational opportunities that our properties present. Unfortunately, our properties also attract a criminal element and criminal enterprise. You're going to get an overview of one enterprise that both of these commanders have been for quite some time now combating. And the first time that you learned about our marijuana eradication activities was probably 4 or 5 years ago. That effort, the team that addresses those concerns has evolved, as you will see, quite a bit from those early days. So I introduce to you Captain Chris Anderson, whose office is out of Ephrata, and Captain Rich Mann, his office is out of Yakima. And both of these gentlemen are on the marijuana eradication team. Don't let the white hair fool you. He's actually in pretty good shape.
He has hair. What?
He's got hair.
He has hair.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Director Storr, and Director Anderson. I think you're messing up my notes. For some of you, this will be a brief overview of what we presented to you a couple years ago. For the new commissioners, this will be a brief history on where we started, and where we've gone, and where we are at the current time. The team was developed a couple years ago in 2008 based on a threat that we saw developing on our public lands. And the two primary objectives of why we started this team was because of severe environmental damage that was occurring and the direct threat to public safety. So we have a PowerPoint presentation. Our outline is a little different from the PowerPoint. The PowerPoint is to provide you with some of the photographs we've obtained over the years and give you some, to be able to relate to some of the history, and then some video footage that we've captured over the years. So I'll start with our program mission statement. We all know that the department owns or manages nearly 1 million acres of land, and that one of our core functions is protecting those agency lands. In the last decade, we've seen a large increase in the number of large-scale commercial or industrial marijuana gardens being cultivated on our remote public lands. This problem's not unique to Washington. I'm sure you've all seen the TV shows that have highlighted this growing epidemic that these marijuana gardens are being established and cultivated on public lands. The average garden is between 5 and 10,000 plants, with an estimated street value of about $1,000 per plant. So we're talking about millions and millions of dollars. These gardens are funded and operated by Mexican drug cartels. The cartels have learned that it's easier to grow a high-quality marijuana crop in this country rather than try and smuggle it over the border. The cartels will operate numerous gardens. In the event that they lose one or two, they still make several million dollars. And I'm going to be going over the environmental damage while Captain Mann will address the public safety issue. This is a picture of a garden that was in Chelan County that was rather large. It looks like it's part of the forest, but this was about a 10,000 plant garden that was hollowed out, several plots within the forest. No trails, no roads, and it just established on the side of a mountain. The growers live off the land. A lot of times they establish a camp, and they bring in all their materials, food supplies, propane tanks, and they'll live there primarily throughout the growing season. Some of them do establish a camp to begin with, and then they go in and out and don't necessarily stay on the landscape the whole time. Gives you an idea. This was a large garden plot outside of Moses Lake, established in the desert wildlife area, right in the middle of the wildlife area. And this is a scarecrow that they had established there for keeping the animals away from their plants. These are some of the booby traps, if you will, that they have established. They put these up on the trails so they can hear us coming. They're pop cans rigged with pebbles inside and with fishing string going across the trail, give them a heads up that we're coming. This is the portion that really concerns us, is the indiscriminate use of deadly chemicals that they use a lot of times, mixing directly into a local water source. They need cover to be so they're not observed from the air. They need water for their plants. And they need the fertilizers, which a lot of times they mix right into a local water source. Some of these chemicals you cannot buy in the United States. They're so toxic. They're brought across the border from Mexico, and a lot of them have warning labels on them about any human contact with them. So this is the type of stuff that they're using in these gardens. This was a large grow established over several mountainsides up off the Sinlahiquin Wildlife Area in Okanagan County. This is the Sinlahiquin grow here. Short video. Shows you the camp that was established and all the garbage that was that they bring in. And none of this stuff ever comes off the landscape.
This is while they were living there, obviously, but when they leave, that stuff stays behind.
This garden plot was located up on a plateau well above the nearest roadway. This was a long, tough hike up into this mountain spot, but it was very well designed, very well hidden. Yeah, it was located by a deer hunter. He stumbled across it during deer season. It had been cleaned or cleared by then of plants, but we started monitoring this, and sure enough, they came back. When they have a good garden site, they don't want to give it up. They've got too much work, too much money invested in these sites. You can see the propane bottles, all the food that's left behind. And what we try and do is after these places are eradicated, we'll work with our partners in the wildlife program to try and clean up these sites the best we can, haul out the material. We try and haul out a lot of it when we have a helicopter on site, and then the wildlife program will come in and partner with us and help clean up the site and then try and return it to as normal state as possible.
Commissioner Perry?
Yeah, could I ask a question?
Sure.
In the Sinlahiquin one that you showed there that you said was fairly large, how many people would be involved in that?
There was two growers on each site, living on site. So I think up there we had four.
I believe there was three sites up there with two growers each, and each site had somewhere between 7,000 and 10,000 plants on it.
One of the sites was on state land, that's the reason that we were involved, and then two of the sites, I believe, were on Forest Service. So we had teams from both agencies working these three sites all at the same time.
Thank you.
Every site requires a lot of water. Small streams are dammed and diverted. This is off the I Road. This is out in the desert wildlife area. These were several wetlands that they hollowed out, and And this is where they were mixing their chemicals right into those water sources. You can, hard to see, but you can see an irrigation pipe there pumping out the water to their, and they have five garden sites in this area. So this was a large one. This was probably 10,000 plants. This is another hollowed out area. This is the one up in the Sinlahiquin. The biggest material that we remove from these sites is this irrigation hose. I mean, they got miles and miles of it, as you'll see, just before we took some out with a helicopter. But after these gardens are eradicated, we...
You got the other video.
Not going to play. What we do after we eradicate a site is we intensely monitor the site for a number of years by going back in and checking on them, because they hate to give up a good site. This photo here was out of Chelan County. As you can see, that is a huge pile of irrigation pipe that they run from their water source back up onto these mountainsides. There's a lot of work to remove all this piping from the sites. We found that the most proactive way to deal with these is, instead of being reactive, is we try and take a proactive approach. And that means that using local knowledge and aerial photographs, we will try and identify potential sites based on water sources and cover. And then we go out there and actually do walkthroughs and try and locate these things and before they really have a chance to get going. Poaching is a large part of our operations. As you saw, we have a lot of taco shells, vegetables, and all they need to supply is a fresh source of meat. And in this case here, we've got, I believe that's bear meat. So we have remains of bear, deer, squirrels, birds. And Captain Mann will go into where we're at, where we've been, and where we're going at this time.
And just a brief history, I guess, for the new commissioners on the commission is, prior to about 2008, our officers were, is that going to pick up? Are we getting it? There you go. Our officers were often asked to be members of the local team. So our sheriff's offices, the WSP, when they went in to do eradications in places, we didn't have a task force of our own, basically. We found out that when we went into these things that we were often ill-equipped, didn't have the proper training for those types of raids and stuff. Go ahead, Chris. And you can kind of see from this one, everyone's got a different kind of uniform on, different kind of clothes as we go through. So we had no special equipment, very little training, and it was kind of throw what you had together on your back and off you went. So we saw a need internally, if we were going to do this type of activity with the inherent dangers, that we needed to professionalize our team at least and get some training and equipment for us. And we quickly learned also that as we went into these, that local law enforcement really was not going to be proactive, especially on state lands. They didn't have the funding. They didn't have the staff either to go after these. So as what happened for us, at least off state lands, every year we had gardens that were located that we knew about, but there wasn't staffing to go in and either eradicate them or try to catch the growers. And subsequently, tens of thousands of plants, marijuana plants, at $1,000 plus a piece, tens of millions of dollars for going into the street market. So we had a choice as an agency, either to concede defeat, allow them to use our lands freely without any boundaries on them, or we needed to fight back. And we kind of took the second approach in 2008. We formed a team of officers from Eastern Washington, mostly out of regions two and three. Went ahead and got training and equipment, and we proactively went after locating and trying to eradicate grows that were on public land, aimed mostly at our properties. We own about 800,000 acres in those two regions, but on public land, so DNR, Forest Service, those other lands also, kind of a thing. Most of our operations we conduct in the south half of Region 1, down in that Dayton country. It's got a tremendous amount of activity in it, through the Columbia Basin, and it doesn't have to be in the foothills. It's out in the desert where there's water source, and then in the valleys and the foothills of Region 3, we found quite a bit.
As you can see from these photographs, this was from the Columbia Basin also, down by Royal City. This guy was just getting started. We found it on a proactive walk through the wildlife area, and he had about 8,000 starter plants there ready to go. He had a camp established, and he was going to be living in this place. Unfortunately, we didn't catch him. He heard us coming and was able to escape. We did get his cell phones, though.
So that was one. The other four, we had one near Rogers Pond. Again, that was near Royal City, and that was in a hollowed-out Russian olive thicket again, which seems to be the favorite out in the desert country. They hollow out the bottom and grow underneath. The little video clip here, I think, is of us actually when we were out doing our proactive work, actually walked into this one, looking at an old site.
I'm going to play for you. Can't find your mouse.
Commissioner Carpenter.
Madam Chair, thank you. There's no federal assistance. DEA, is this beyond their scope of authority to assist? Is this strictly your folks' responsibility?
On the public land, on our lands, we become the primary person. And I'm going to hit it a little later, but the funding that we use to equip the officers and to pay expenses is federal money. It's off the HIDA, the high-intensity drug trafficking money that's funneled through actually the State Patrol, and then we get about $25,000 a year at this point out of that. We don't work alone. When we go to take down a large grow, we work with DEA, our local task force, as well as the State Patrol's CERT team, which is their cannabis eradication team.
Thank you.
We had one up near Oak Creek that was actually on our wildlife area this past year was, I think, 7,000 plants, and there was three or four satellite grows found off of that, about the same up on Forest Service land, and then the Sinlahican grow that you guys were told about. A little history for us. 2010, and this is statewide, so this is us along with our other partners. About 300,000 plants were eradicated from the state of Washington. And in 2011, I believe that number goes up to about 320,000. Most of it outdoor grows, and in working in conjunction with, generally the State Patrol has a team that they run for 8 weeks. We offer and we provide a person on that team for every one of those 8 weeks that they do. Street value, I think you've heard it said, but a mature plant about 6 foot tall has a street value of over $1,000 is what it produces. So 10,000 plants is $10 million worth of product that hits the street.
And another benefit to us is the use of the helicopter, which is paid for by federal funds. That is the only way to get all that equipment and those plants out of that off the landscape is by helicoptering it up, because you're not going to carry all that stuff back out.
So as you're aware, we own almost 1 million acres. This little clip is just kind of talks to that. For those of you who don't know, this is a desert south of Moses Lake.
These grow operations are all about money. If the illegal grow operations are not abated,
that was a flag we took off one of the camps.
They had a flag?
It's interesting what they haul in with them.
Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. When you use the term eradicate, what does that mean? Torch them, pull them? I mean, how do you deal with that many?
They're basically cut down. If DEA is involved in them, they actually want to count, I think, the first 1,000 plants. We have to actually pull all of those. And if they're going to use them in a federal prosecution, they have to document root stock on so many. Other than that, they're cut down. They're bundled in 50 to 100 a bundle. We tie them up with tape. They're piled up, and a helicopter hauls them off, and it's either burned or buried or disposed of that way.
And then what is done with the land to rehabilitate that? Anything?
In a lot of areas, I don't think a whole lot. Part of it, I think, is the remote sites they use are pretty much inaccessible to anything other than letting nature take its course back and put native vegetation back there.
We'll try and remove all the garbage and then let nature take its course.
Sure.
Commissioner Smith?
Is there any biological activity that could be dealt with on the land that would prevent it from being a grow operation again? Is there? That's not detrimental to the broader area.
Probably not. I mean, if you were to go in and, some kind of pesticide or something, you're dealing with broadleaf plants, so anything that would affect marijuana is probably going to affect native vegetation also.
Have you seen ones that you've cleaned up and then you've come back a couple of years and they're resettled?
Right. That's what I was saying. We'll monitor those sites very intensely for the next probably 3 or 4 years. We'll hike back in year after year just to check to see, because they will try and reestablish the site.
Commissioner Perry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is there any way to say on a given site, or maybe several sites, to track that back to where they're coming from, the parent organization that's putting all this together?
Yes, but it's very time consuming. Grant County INET unit did that about 3 years ago, where they monitored the site. They had cameras in there. They followed the suspects back and forth from county to county. It took them all summer, and they were able to track it back to at least to a certain level, to the mid-managers, if you will, but that's as far as they can get. It's effective, but it's very time-consuming, and it's beyond the resources of most agencies to do.
And this goes back to Mexico, or is it centered in the United States?
It goes back to Mexico.
Thank you.
So obviously, our commitment goes back to what we do as an agency and what our mission statement is, and that's to obviously protect our lands, not only on the environmental side, but also from use by criminal organizations. As an entity, we want to field, make sure we have a team of trained officers to respond, so we're not putting ourselves in danger and threat. And then probably most important is we need to provide a safe outdoor experience to the citizens of this state, those who hunt and fish. Many of the grows we get, the locations, sportsmen are the folks that call us and say, "Yeah, I was up in the woods, I found a bunch of piping someplace." That tells us, well, we need to get in next spring, track that back, and see where it goes. So really, it's public safety and threats. There's a lot of dollars, as Chris said, that are invested in these things. This is a starter section that's going. This was down actually on federal ground by Hanford. This one was. Let's see what you got. We're finding out that more and more, actually every grow we hit in 2011 had firearms in it. So that they're becoming more protective of what they've got and what they're doing. They go in the spring, they stay until fall. When they're done, they harvest the crop, it leaves, everything else stays behind with them. And the firearms become a big issue. In this state, we haven't had an altercation yet. In California, they've seen altercations between just public users and marijuana growers.
This was one we stumbled on down by Royal City. The guy was in the tent, but he was a lot faster than we were.
Bit of chaos when they first go. It's important when you have two different groups of officers coming in from different directions that you keep your heads and try to run them to one place or the other.
He was just getting started. There was probably 8,000 plants in here. This was early in the spring. So he was set for the long haul. That's what they like in the desert, are these little Russian olive groves. They all have water nearby, perfect for growing.
And just some of the firearms that we're seeing now.
That was a grow out of Yakima. The guy was carrying that. This was the guy that ran from the tent in Royal City that you just saw. He had several firearms, including this pistol, under a sleeping bag.
Generally, I mean, this is here. Most of these individuals we've run into, almost all of them, they're undocumented aliens that are in the country. Many of them don't know where they're at, other they've been brought up here to tend to grow for the summertime. They're living in the woods. The groceries are dropped off for them, basically, and that's it. And almost all of them run. This individual, it's hard to tell from the hill, from the picture, that hillside is about this steep. And I think his feet touch ground about every third step, honestly. Him and another individual, this was out of Oak Creek. They were running down a hillside. One of them did take a tumble, got right back up and kept going. We caught one on site. The other one we caught the next morning in town trying to find a cup of coffee at 6 a.m. They've got the advantage of no packs. They don't have 60 pounds of gear on their back when they're going. And these guys had dogs after them. So the reason we're doing this, generally there is no other law enforcement agencies that can respond and devote the time that we need. Everyone's struggling with budget reductions. Grant County, these are some of the partners in the basin that we work with, but they don't have the funding to be proactive about it. So with some staffing, we can, and we're the ones that can ensure the public safety there. We are part of a joint statewide effort. We do use the HIDTA funds or the federal funds to help equipment and pay for overtime when we have it, but most of that money is spent on equipment and then per diem when we're with the Drug Task Force team for the week, the guys are. So we're getting ready for next year. Actually, we start this month with training, and we'll start looking end of this month and into next month at Old Groves and looking at new stuff. Thank you. Any questions?
More questions? Any questions? Really nice presentation. Very interesting. Commissioner Schmitten?
Thank you, Chair, and Captain Anderson and Mann, excellent job as always. Grow operations right now in our part of Chelan County are a big issue, and the county will fly all the surrounding valleys and take care of photos and try and identify them by the color of the plants themselves. But for the most part, most of these operations are found by hikers, hunters, people that stumble onto them, and that's actually where my question lies. What do you do when you find something like this? You know, there's a safety issue. My daughter found one of these. Should there be some sort of outreach program that you identify to the public before it happens? You know, call this number, call us. What to do?
There is a outreach program.
She panicked and was really a frightened young woman.
In our hunting pamphlet, we have a hotline number for the for reporting grows. So, yeah, we've done the outreach.
Great.
You know, and individually, when an individual asks, we tell them, if you walk into one, if you got a GPS, push the button and walk right back out and give us the GPS coordinates, and we'll go in and look at it from there. The other thing is our staff, our wildlife area staff, find these things. Oak Creek staff has found at least two in the last couple of years and come back. And they're out spraying weeds doing their jobs, you know, looking for weed patches, and they come into a canyon, and boom, here's a something that shouldn't be there. So and basically we've talked to them. It's, you find one, back out, give us a call, we'll go and look at it, and then either pull it if it's a small grower right away, or we have time and we believe it'll produce some for the effort, we'll sit on it and then go in and try to take down the growers and get them out of the fields.
Deputy Chief. At my age, I'd rather do something else than hike up and down hills and get eaten by mosquitoes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Pamplin has spoken to enforcement about sending an agency-wide message out to our employees, laying out you know, the strategies and the protocols for when they see suspicious activity or they encounter this type of thing. So we need to make sure that our folks are safe. We tend to follow California trends. And if you looked at what's happened in California over the past decade, these growers are becoming more aggressive. They're becoming more protective of their sites. The public's getting injured. They're being harassed. They're being shot at. Law enforcement officers are being shot at and shot. And, in fact, at least one California game warden was shot through both legs and pinned down for several hours in the middle of a grow. I think Commissioner Perry was with us at the WAFWA meeting where he received an Officer of the Year award. So I think that we've been a little bit lucky, and most certainly the training that these officers prepare themselves with every year has certainly helped in minimizing, you know, the safety risk and making sure that we get in and get out safely. So they train very hard, and it is tough work in some extreme circumstances. So it's no walk in the park.
We certainly understand that. Dr. Anderson?
I just had a couple of comments to add. I think there's some people, when they hear about this type of work that we're doing, they ask, well, why are we doing this work? And I think as this presentation clearly showed, that there are some very real safety hazards that go with having these types of operations on our lands to members of the public, encountering individuals that are involved in this type of activity is a very dangerous thing to do. And so to the extent that we can eliminate these types of activities on our lands and other lands is going to enhance public safety. There's also obviously issues associated with chemicals, with destruction of our lands, disruption of our and the habitat damage that goes along with that. So I think once people have an understanding of what's involved with these types of operations on our lands and the impacts and hazards and risks that it poses, I think there's a lot of acceptance and understanding and value to this type of work that we're doing. But when you just talk about people or they hear that we're engaged in this type of work, they often don't connect the dots and understand why we're placing such a high priority in putting these types of resources toward this problem.
Well stated. Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Phil, maybe it's already done and I'm not aware of it, but would it be considered appropriate to put a warning or public outreach in the hunting and fishing pamphlet, because freshwater fishing, eastern Washington hunting, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, I know we have some information on our website about this, I believe, and I see Mike would know more about that than me. And Joe, did you? So maybe I could ask Deputy Chief Sensi to tell us a little bit about what we already have, but I think that's a good idea, Commissioner Carpenter, that we ought to take a look at.
Thank you, Director Anderson. Madam Chair, we could do more. There is the reporting number in our hunting pamphlet. It's pretty prominent, although I might eat my words, because I think at least one commissioner is looking for it right now. And if you can't find it readily, I'm in trouble. I would like to add just a couple of brief comments to the director's comments. You know, this is a partnership with our brothers and sisters and other law enforcement. And if we weren't engaged They've got enough to do where they wouldn't be interested in making our properties a priority in terms of eradicating this stuff and these people from getting in the way of the public safety and damaging habitats, potentially long-term. So the relationships that these gentlemen have established with these other agencies have gone a long way in bringing other law enforcement resources to bear to work on our issues, look out for our concerns, become more familiar with what our mission is and what our interests are. I mean, we can't afford a helicopter. We can't afford a deuce and a half to haul all that garbage out. It's a fantastic relationship that they've built that has directly benefited this agency because of their participation.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Commissioner Jennings is pointing at his watch. We are far behind, but thank you so much, guys. Be safe out there. We see the importance of what you're doing, no doubt. Thank you very much. We've got to load the computer back up for the next presentation. And I think we're just going to continue on through this presentation, then take a break, and hope that we can be efficient with the last few items.
Heard my voice too.